athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event. Then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
Thank you for joining me on another edition of the program. Total domination of Super Bowl 59 by the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, total domination. Forget about the fact that the score said 40-22. It wasn't even that close. You talk about a team being prepared for the then two-time defending Super Bowl champions. The Eagles were prepared. And look, when you looked at this game, if you really broke this game down going into this football game, you looked at it from both sides, you looked at the talent level. I mean, the Eagles clearly had the more talent, especially really on both sides of the football. I mean, you look at the receiving core, you look at the running back, like, the Eagles way more talented from a running back perspective. We saw where we knew that the Eagles had a really good offensive line, and that really showed more so, I would say, in the pass protection of Jalen Hurts. I give the Kansas City Chiefs a lot of credit for being able to stop Saquon Barkley, but I don't know if the mentality was such that we shut Saquon down, let Jalen Hurts beat us. Well, look, remember the last time these two teams played in the Super Bowl? Jalen Hurts had some pretty gaudy numbers, like did more than enough to win that Super Bowl going back a couple of years ago. And so, look, the Chiefs did a number, if you will, on Saquon Barkley. He had a couple of decent, he had a 10-yard run. He may have had a 7-yard run. But the rest of the time, it was tough going. That said, the strategy by the Eagles and the play calling and getting Jalen Hurts outside of the pocket, letting him throw deep inside of the pocket. That play call, when the score looked like it was out of reach anyway, I think it may have been 27-0 at the time, and they dropped back off of a Kansas City turnover, drop back and throw it deep to Devontae Smith in the end zone. I mean, that was absolutely brilliant. It was a dominating performance on both sides of the football because the Eagles' defense, especially up front, okay? And look, we can talk about the Chiefs, and maybe the Chiefs didn't have the right person. You had a guy playing left tackle that really was a guard and all of those kinds of things. And we saw that happen to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl that they lost also. They just didn't have it to the Rams. Didn't have the right personnel. They didn't have a good offensive line. So the Chiefs are going to have to make some adjustments in the offseason, addressing the offensive line, amongst other things. But I'm going to tell you what. While I'm not excited for Philadelphia Eagles fans in the least, look, the Eagles deserve to win this football game. Jalen Hurts deserved to win this football game. All of the preparation by Jalen Hurts and all of the criticism that Jalen Hurts has heard, not only this season, not only last season, but let's go back to his days at Oklahoma immediately thereafter, when there was a lot of talk that Jalen Hurts his game wasn't going to translate into the National Football League, the adversity that he certainly took on at Alabama, with all of that, right? All of that stuff, right? Jalen Hurts has shown that while we don't regard him, we don't, and that's on us. That's on us. We don't regard him as one of the elite level quarterbacks in the National Football League. We don't regard him that way because we look at the likes of Lamar Jackson. We look at the likes of, you know, Josh Allen. We look at the likes of Patrick Mahomes. We talk about Joe Burrow. The fact of the matter is that in big games, Jalen Hurts plays at an elite level. Okay, in the two biggest games, he has played at an elite level. Not to mention the fact, okay, so maybe it was a little, and look, you got to look at the offensive coordinator situation, which is again getting ready to change because Kellen Moore now is the new head football coach of the Saints. So you're going to have another offensive coordinator now for Jalen Hurts. Hopefully it'll be a similar system and you get somebody in that can play to the strengths of Jalen. Like, I don't understand, and this is something else, right? Like, you get a whole new offensive coordinator, and it seems like even though, you know, you look at Nick Sirianni, he has an offensive philosophy, and the philosophy is what it is in terms of his philosophy, right? Then it's up for the offensive coordinator to execute the philosophy, but to get into the nuance and the minutiae and the specifics of that philosophy. And so sometimes when that happens, these guys get off track, and I think that's what happened until Kellen Moore has come along and show why he deserved to have a head coaching position even before now, because now he has to take a head coaching position with the Saints, which is not a great position right now. Like, in terms of the support of the Saints, and I'm going to tell you what, being in New Orleans was a lot of fun. To me, there's no city like New Orleans. It's an international city. It is, to me, the only city in the South that has that Southern charm with the big city feel. Like, there's no other city like that in the South. You've got other cities that may have more charm, but don't have that big city feel. And then you may have other cities that are bigger cities, but don't have that Southern charm. And so New Orleans has a mixture of that. So I say that to say that Saints fan base is serious. They want a winner. They've won a Super Bowl. They've had success there more recently, not in the beginning, in the Archie Manning days and all of that, and the bags over the faces and all of that. That's been long gone, right? So this is a city, even when Sean left as the head coach, even when Drew Brees retired, that was still a defense that was in position to win the NFC South and to make it to the, and that the last couple of years, and that just has not happened. So this is a city that's starving for that. I think it's going to be a little bit of time before the success is there. Okay, all of that said, we'll see what happens with Jalen Hurts moving forward. But boy, he answered all of the critics, right? And now, going into next season, we have to say we can no longer ignore the fact that Jalen Hurts is an elite-level quarterback in the National Football League. Maybe the numbers aren't as gaudy as the other four I mentioned, but the winning is there. And by the way, the arm is there, and also the legs are there. Like, he can really run the football. Like, I know it may have seen it was at times where you saw him, but every quarterback has struggled at times, right? Even this season, Lamar Jackson struggled at times. It's not that Josh Allen struggled per se. It's just that, you know, when all of the talk about Lamar Jackson was resurfacing the last 4 weeks of the season, and we were talking about the fact that Lamar Jackson may win another MVP, Josh Allen just kind of steadied his course, and we saw where Josh Allen did end up winning the MVP. But now you have to put Jalen Hurts in the elite level quarterbacks, when you're talking about elite level quarterbacks in the National Football League, he has to be in the top five. No doubt about it. He's won a Super Bowl, right? Like in a Super Bowl, when Saquon Barkley was in the conversation for the MVP and had three really good play or three really good playoff or excuse me, two really good playoff games. Two really good playoff games, okay? Prior to the Super Bowl, he was shut down. And again, I'm going to continue to give Spagnuolo a lot of credit, right? Like, you know, I can't really fault him from a defensive perspective. They aim to shut the run down and, you know, allow for the receivers to play one-on-one. There was a lot of mistakes. There was a lot of penalties. Like you had a defensive holding or a pass interference. You had what on a third down, the Chiefs about to get off the field. You got an offsides guy lines up offsides. Like, remember that happened to the Chiefs prior to all of these Super Bowl runs when the Chiefs lost to the Patriots Patrick Mahomes' first season as the quarterback. That happened, right? So it just inexcusable things that I really don't blame Spagnuolo on. You know, I would say that I was surprised that Andy Reid did not run the football more. I was surprised that the Chiefs did not establish the run more. One of the interceptions, you know, by Mahomes was definitely his fault. The other was hit at the time he was throwing the football, and that led directly, I think, to the interception. He had a drop ball, he had a couple of, he just didn't get a lot of help either. I mean, he wasn't good, but he didn't get a lot of help either from his receivers, from his play calling, from the limited running. I can't even say the running game because the running game was pretty much non-existent for the Kansas City Chiefs. So look, that's my take on the Super Bowl. We got a lot to cover today here on the program. Still to come here on Box to Row. Robert Jones is the head men's basketball coach at Norfolk State. He's going to join us today on the program. Also joining us today here on Box to Row, Delaware State head men's basketball's coach Stan Waterman, also going to join us on the program, plus more of my reflections and thoughts on the Super Bowl and New Orleans as Box to Row rolls on.
If you're going on a trip and you need a car reservation, call the car reservation hotline now for access to every major rental car deal across the United States. We can save you a ton of money. Don't get lost searching and don't get lost in an endless phone tree nightmare. When you call us, there's never a hold time. You'll get connected to a real human. We have access to crazy rental car deals. And we make it easy. Just one phone call to access everything. How much simpler can it get? Find out right now for free what kind of car rental deals we can get you. You'll be amazed. Pick up the phone and call the car rental hotline right now.
Call 800-917-1119. 800-917-1119.
We'll even give you one free rental car day with your reservation. Write this number down right now and call.
Call 800-917-1119. That's 800-917-1119.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
The one and only Drew Brees. Just speak to what the city of New Orleans means to you.
Oh, look, the city embraced me at a time when I was really struggling. I wasn't sure what my football career would look like moving forward, coming off of the injury that I suffered with the San Diego Chargers. And, this city was reeling as well. 6 months post-Katrina, still so much devastation. And yet, we both kind of looked at this as, man, we're going to do this together. You know, we're going to lean on each other. And you know, I needed this city as much as maybe they needed someone to believe in them as well. And so it was just a match made in heaven.
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
Box to Box Row.
Box to Row.
Box to Row.
Still to come here on Box to Row, Robert Jones, the head men's basketball coach at Norfolk State. Also, still to come here on the program, Stan Waterman, the head men's basketball coach at Delaware State. The HBCU National Players of the Week, first Bethune-Cookman guard, Trey Thomas. In two victories for the Wildcats last week, Thomas averaged 22.5 points, 6.5 rebounds, and shot 43% from the field. Also, Claflin guard Nia Morris is one of the best players. Like, seen Nia Morris play in person. She is superb, right? In the Panthers went 2-1 last week. She averaged 23.6 rebounds, 4 steals, shot 52% from the field, 100% from the free throw line, and 37% from three-point range. And I'm telling you, they're in Orangeburg. If you haven't seen, I don't know if Claflin has any more games remaining, but you got to see Nia Morris play in person. She is superb. Nia Morris and Trey Thomas, the HBCU National Players of the Week. So a lot to get to. I want to kind of wrap up New Orleans and Super Bowl 59 and then move on to some other National Football League talk. So again, first time at the Super Bowl in 16 years, and it was eye-opening in a lot of respects. Again, a lot more media. Everybody's got a podcast now, right? So you've got all of these different, and in matter of fact, it's not even called Radio Row anymore. It's called Media Row. You've got all of these podcasts. Got to meet a bunch of people. There were people that we wanted to talk to, and you have different potentials of people to talk to, whether it's celebrities, whether it's players, whatever the case may be. You generally try and talk to whoever the handler is. And, you know, we tried that on several occasions, but we were able to catch up with the likes of a Steve Weich of NFL Network. We hadn't talked with Steve Weich. He may have come on. Maybe he came on earlier this year prior to the beginning of the football season. I don't remember off the top of my head, but it was good to see him in person and catch up with him. We caught up with a gentleman by the name of Hoosh Bouchette. He is the starting quarterback for the USA flag football team, which will participate. The flag football will be a new Olympic sport in 2028. So I had a chance to catch up with him. Good conversation with him also because he's also a Xavier grad and from right there in New Orleans. So we had a good conversation. Mike Locksley, the head football coach of Maryland, was there. So, you know, we had some really good conversations. And lastly, and this is where it's all really, a lot of times it's about relationships, right? Drew Brees came and stopped by our booth, and we had a chance to talk with Drew Brees. I mean, he's a guy that the city of New Orleans has embraced so much, brought the city a championship, a Super Bowl, and had a really good conversation with him. And like I said, it's about relationships. And I got a shout out, you know, Matt Cheslick, the former communications director for NASCAR. Now, of course, you know, if you've listened to this show for any years, we used to have a lot of NASCAR drivers on. You know, at one point, a lot of them. And that was because of Matt. We broadcast shows from the Daytona 500, was at the Daytona Media Day in 2020, right prior to the pandemic, right? Bubba Wallace and all of these guys, you know, Chase Elliott and all of these guys, right? And so Matt also was doing work for Sports Illustrated Tickets. And Drew Brees was an ambassador for Sports Illustrated tickets. So I hadn't seen talk with Matt every now and again, but I hadn't seen him probably since NASCAR 2020. Or no, matter of fact, speaking of relationships, Joe Gibbs went into the NASCAR Hall of Fame in 2020. Well, via Matt, able to talk with Joe Gibbs in person. Again, that happened, of course, right prior to the pandemic. So anyway, you know, saw Matt, and we talked for a minute, and he says, well, you know, what's your schedule? This is Thursday. He said, what does your schedule look like for tomorrow in terms of what we were doing, maybe some of the interviews that we had? And I said, well, you know, not a whole lot. He said, I may be able to get you Drew Brees. I'm like, you know, you jump. You're like, wow. I mean, Drew Brees is Drew Brees. Hasn't been away from the game that long. When he retired, he was the leading passer of all time, over 80,000 yards, leading all time in terms of completion percentage, those kinds of things, plus Super Bowl champion, what he means to New Orleans. We're right there in the city of New Orleans. It just makes all the sense in the world. So he said, I can't promise you, but I'm going to try to make it happen, right? So the day goes, Friday comes, Matt's in communication with me saying he thinks it's going to happen, and whatever the case may be, he sends me a text about 1 o'clock local time, says we're doing this this interview with Bloomberg. Right after that, we're coming to see you. Knew exactly where we were, all of that. So sure enough, here they come. But there's like a bunch of media and a bunch of people surrounding Drew Brees. That's how popular he is. Like, all of the local media still wants to talk to him. There was somebody, there was a young lady promoting some kind of flag football. It wasn't Team USA, but it was something else she was promoting. And, I mean, he is just so nice and so cool. You know, he talked with her for a little while. She had a couple of questions, you know, trying to promote her product. He even held up, I don't know, she had some kind of flag football deal. I don't know what it was, but, you know, just so nice. Then he comes over and talks to us, and I know everybody else is around like looking like, how did you get that? But the thing about it, it's about relationships, right? So it was great. We had just a fabulous time in New Orleans. And as a matter of fact, you can visit the Box to Row YouTube page, okay, and relive some of the moments that we had. So we did a video where we summed up a little bit of our time in New Orleans and also some of the conversations we had. Look, there are two assistant coaches each for both the Eagles and also the Chiefs that are either have HBCU ties or are HBCU grads. So we had a chance to talk to those coaches. I mean, the access was just unbelievable. And that's, you know, sort of been my argument with the National Football League for the last 14 years or previous 14 years. It's like, well, you know, we need access. Now, the teams are generally pretty good. Like during the season, of course, we've had players on and all that. The teams are really good. Like the teams are the best. When you talk about pro sports, like the teams are the best. The NFL teams are the best in terms of providing players. The other three major pro franchises, not as much. Like, they don't provide players as much as the NFL does, right? It's just the league, very protective, whatever. But anyway, we got in, and we look forward to being there, meaning at the Super Bowl in future years. So, just wanted to sum that up. Let's talk Aaron Rodgers. So, the Jets said, even though Aaron Rodgers hasn't made his decision as of yet in terms of if he's coming back to play, period, and then if it would be the Jets, and I'm going to say this before I continue on, there are a lot of parallels between Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre, okay? Let's just get that out of the way, and I'll tell you why. So the Jets said, Aaron, we're good. You know, thank you for the 2 years, really one, because the first year he had the Achilles injury. But no, we're good. We're good, Brett. Or excuse me, we're good, Aaron. We're going to move on, right? Probably, I would say more notably because of, like, a lot of people I've heard say this, because Aaron Glenn wants to establish, you know, sort of a new culture and doesn't want the baggage, because there is baggage with Aaron Rodgers. And I can totally understand that, because my initial thought was, well, if I'm the Jets, what is my other recourse in terms of who I'm going to get as a quarterback that's better than Aaron Rodgers? Why not just bring him back? You made all of these moves to satisfy Aaron Rodgers. Why not just bring him back and try to make this run? And I can understand why the Jets, and in particular Aaron Glenn, doesn't want to do that. I have no problem with that, okay? The Jets, and there are some quarterbacks that are out there, and we'll see what happens, and we'll see what happens with the draft. Just because you don't have the top two picks and maybe have a chance at the top two quarterbacks doesn't mean that you can't draft a quarterback to have success. Ask Denver and Bo Nix, who was, what, I think the 10th pick with the Broncos, and look at the season that he had, right? What's the future now of Aaron Rodgers? And like I said, you remember Brett Favre back in this, when I remember, because when this show first came on the air, August 20th of 2005, we were talking Brett Favre and how he was holding the Packers hostage, whether he was going to play, whether he was not going to play. And is Aaron Rodgers not doing something similar here? I mean, I get it. You got to take some time to really think about coming back. But then also the parallels between these two gentlemen's careers. You thought that Favre may be a Packer for life. He wasn't. The Packers drafted Favre's replacement in Rodgers. The Packers drafted Rodgers' replacement in Love. Parallels. Rodgers moves on to a new team, doesn't have as much success. Favre moved on to a new team. He had more success. And one of those teams, by the way, was the Jets, right? Minnesota and the Jets, right? So there are a lot of parallels there. But the question becomes, where does Aaron Rodgers go? Does he go to Steelers, to the Steelers? Does that really satisfy Pittsburgh, right? Like, I don't think Justin Fields is the answer. But does that satisfy the Steelers? Does that make the Steelers a contender? The Steelers need much more help. Then they need a running game also than Aaron Rodgers. So a lot of questions still to be answered in terms of the future of Aaron Rodgers. But the first question is, Rodgers needs to answer the question in terms of if, in fact, he will return. Up next here on Box to Row, Norfolk State head men's basketball coach Robert Jones.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
Here with Stephen Curry, your progress from Davidson to now with Golden State.
Where I've come from in high school into a small D1 college at Davidson. And it's a great story, and I'm just having fun, you know, living my dream and riding the ride.
Main event! Jey Uso joining us here. Could there be a possible return to the bloodline?
For me?
Yes. At some point.
I'm gone, D. Hey, I threw the deuces up before. I'll do it again, man.
Come on, main event. That's family, man. I mean, I'm not talking about now. I get it. But down the line, like, come on.
Hey, D, you see how they be treating me, man? Come on, man. That something. It be your own family sometimes be doing you wrong, Lou. I got to go, man. Hey, I'm doing all right by myself.
She's Simone Biles.
Actually really fun, like, to be honest. Had a lot of fun. We were like, oh, of course, like, we're in the best shape of our life. We're feeling confident about our body, and we hope that other young girls and women, like, feel that being strong is still beautiful.
The one and only Michael Strahan. And cannot have you on without talking about Texas Southern. Cannot. So how did you ultimately end up at Texas Southern?
Yeah, from Houston, grew up in Germany. When I was a senior in high school, my dad said, I'm going to send you to stay with your uncle in Houston and get a football scholarship. So I went to Houston. I played at Westbury High School for 1 year. Texas Southern was probably the only school that saw me play, being right there in Houston and being a local boy. And Coach Walter Highsmith, I went over to see him, and he offered me a scholarship. It was perfect for me, man, to go to the HBCU, to go to Texas Southern. The size of the school, the education they gave me, not just in the classroom, but about life. I would have been swallowed up at another school. I wouldn't have felt as if I really could have made a difference or had a real purpose of being there. But at Texas Southern, I always felt like I could make a difference and I had a purpose.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Skylar Diggins of the WNBA. Thank you for having me. I'm excited. You know, just been able to work a lot on my body and my shape, and a lot of things that I feel like I needed to work on in the offseason. I was able to get that done, and, you know, it's showing.
Snoop Dogg is on the mic. Pay attention.
I appreciate the love that I get, and I appreciate the sport of hip-hop. And it's given me back that same love in return, you know, for the amount of years that I've been doing it. I've always went into it with the same, you know, spirit of I make music for the people. I make it go for them, and I always make them a part of it. And I never separated myself and tried to be a star. I've always wanted to be one of the people that you can look to as somebody that was, you know, like your uncle because of the way that I treat people. And I feel like my career is representative of that. That's why the longevity is there. That's why the love is there. And that's why I maintain the status of, you know, being relevant for so many years.
I'm talking about none other than Serena Williams.
That was definitely one of the better matches I've ever played. I've had it just like that. You know, I was really focused. Just really, you know, excited.
Demetrius Flannery, a.k.a. Lil Meech.
50 Cent in Atlanta told me that he was going to move me from my hometown, Miami, to L.A., put me in acting classes. And I had to go 5 days a week, 2 times a day. Only had about a year and a half. But once I started, I didn't want to stop, you know. So once in a lifetime opportunity, I didn't want to watch somebody else, you know, get the role of playing my father and me having to watch him on TV. Opportunity passed me by, so I just buckled down and was focused, man. Put everything to the side and made sure that my number one thing that I wanted to do was focus on being the best possible actor I can be for the show. And that's how it happened.
That is the voice of Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm just, you know, trying to get better every single day. We've been through a lot as a team, and I enjoy playing with a great group of guys. So, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy every moment of it.
That is the voice of Common. You went to Florida A&M.
Oh, FAMU days were some of the best days of my life. I mean, I had so much fun there. It was, like, invigorating. It was an introduction to a new aspect of culture in the world. I mean, the Southern girls was just incredible. you know, the food was great. The black college experience, you can't beat that.
Kyrie Irving.
Playing at Duke for Coach K. What was that like and how that prepared you for the league now?
Playing 11 games, you know, a lot of people think that's not a big package for you to become a better player, but for me it was. Playing for Coach K, he gave me the keys to the car, and I was driving it in first 8 games, and, you know, being a part of something special like that and having a brotherhood built at an institution such as that one is an experience that you never forget.
Ice Cube has been our guest.
Hey, man, thanks for letting me talk a little music, movies, and sports. Hey, my favorite 3 topics.
Hey, y'all, it is the EST of WWE, the strongest, the fastest, the roughest, the toughest, the quickest, the greatest, the best on Box to Row. Tune in if you want to catch the best BEST interview ever.
From the Press Box to Press Row is the sports talk show that is the voice and the talk of HBCU sports, with a flair for pro sports talk and entertainment. Check the show out online at BoxToRow.com.
That's Box to Row, real, relevant radio. 12 seasons in as the head men's basketball coach at Norfolk State is Robert Jones. The Spartans are 16-8. On the season, and as a matter of fact, on Saturday, going to take on Maryland Eastern Shore. The Spartans sit in first place in the MEAC. Robert Jones, again, the head men's basketball coach of the Spartans, joining us here on Box to Row. What's going on, Coach Jones?
Nothing much, man. You know, same old, trying to figure it out, trying to figure out how to try to get a championship like everybody else, I guess, at this point.
Yeah, well, you know, you guys are getting it done a little bit. You've won 4 straight bowl games. You know, just your thoughts on the way the team is playing so far, or right now, I should say.
I think we're doing a pretty good job. I mean, 16-8 is obviously a really good record, especially with the schedule that we played. And, of course, being in first place, you can't go higher than number one. So, I guess, in theory, we're doing a pretty good job. But, of course, you know, as a coach, competitive coach, you always think there's something that could be done better, things that we still need to work on, you know, so on and so forth. There's no finished product yet. And just got to keep trying to find that perfection. You know, I don't think we've found perfection yet.
12 days in between the last time you played Central until you play on Saturday. What you know, take us through. I know that's where the MEAC is now. What were you able to work on, or what have you been able to work on during that time?
Well, with the 12-day span off, I think that we've been able to really identify some of our weaknesses and some areas that we need to just tweak a little bit. So with us not having to concentrate on a game or concentrate on a scout or anything like that until recently now with Maryland Eastern Shore, it's been all about us. And we've been able to really not only get a little bit of rest, but really work on things that we need to work on. So I'm excited about getting that better second half of the season.
Is having some of this time off, and that's just the nature of where things are in the MEAC, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. It's just what it is. But does that give you more of an advantage per se?
I don't know if it's giving me more of an advantage. I think it gives everybody a little advantage. You know, I think that it's almost like All-Star break in the NBA. You know, you get a chance to rejuvenate. I'm sure teams have, you know, got a couple of new plays that they added, a couple of new defensive schemes, maybe tweak something. You know, it's like things like that, which I think is beneficial to everybody. Hopefully it'll be more beneficial to us. But you know, I think it's going to be beneficial to everybody. And probably the second half of the season, you're going to see even more of a competitive MEAC slate, which so far has been, you know, been really good so far.
Of course, we're joined by Robert Jones. He's the head men's basketball coach at Norfolk State, joining us here on Box to Row. By the way, in 12 seasons, the Spartans have been in eight postseason tournaments. Brian Moore, like, I mean, he's right now 50-40-84 guy, right? Plus, he's got like 70. He's 2-1 in terms of assists to turnovers. Talk about this guy. Obviously, he's the MEAC's MVP right now.
With Moore, like I said, he's been a guy that fit in seamlessly for what we're trying to do with the schemes and things of that nature. You know, I think that, you know, a lot of times, like I said, people don't people talk about what we're doing now, but people don't talk about, you know, we lost a lot, man. We lost the player of the year and the sixth man of the year, and like we're doing, in theory, better than what we were doing last year. You know, so that kind of like almost gets overlooked a little bit because people are so used to us being good, I guess, you know, for the most part, or being somewhere near the top of the standings and having good records. But to lose the player of the year and the sixth man of the year, man, I mean, those are two big hits, you know, to like be right where we at. And once again, credit to Brian Moore and other guys who helped continue on that legacy.
I mean, it's all kinds of guys. Can you explain in terms of the way your team is shooting? 49% as a team is astronomical. I didn't look at the numbers, but that's got to be amongst the best in all of Division I.
Yeah, I think we're number 20 in Division I. You know, maybe, you know, just like on any nightly basis, you could have dropped down to 21. You know, maybe it could have moved up to 19. You know, but last time I checked, we were 20 in that range. And so to be top 20 out of 64, 68 teams, whatever it might be at this point, it's tremendous. You know, and I know Brian, of course, gets a lot of fanfare, and rightfully so, but that's the whole team shooting that way. And I think that's just us executing at a high level and taking quality shots, and also not just taking quality shots, being able to make quality shots.
Speak to your non-conference schedule. You have a very tough non-conference schedule. You do every year. Your team is very competitive in that non-conference schedule. As a matter of fact, at one point in the non-conference schedule, you had won 3 straight games.
Yeah, I mean, I think analytically, this has actually been my toughest schedule I've ever had as a head coach. And to be where we're at right now is tremendous. I mean, it's funny, this is the toughest schedule I've ever had, but it's also the highest net ranking we've ever had, too. You know, so I guess that kind of goes along with it, you know. But success in that schedule help achieve the things that we're doing now as far as from the stat stuff, you know, from the net rankings and the KenPom and all that stuff like that. It was tremendous. It was tough. You know, we had at the time was number one in the country, Tennessee. We played them. You know, we played some quality mid-majors that we were able to beat with High Point and James Madison and, you know, Hampton, of course, our rival, and UC Davis, which is a really good team out west that a lot of people don't realize. You know, we should have beat Stanford. That's still going to come back probably to haunt us because if we're fortunate enough to go to the NCAA tournament, that was a high major win that we should have got. But either way, we're going to keep plugging along, keep hopefully, you know, going on the right path so we can try to get that magical bid to the NCAA tournament.
No doubt about it. Robert Jones, the head men's basketball coach at Norfolk State, joins us here on the program. Speak to the competitive. If I look at the score just against Tennessee, 15 points, the number one team in the country, as you mentioned. Yeah. Speak to how your team played in that game.
I mean, if you watch the game, you know, it was a lot of times, especially the first half, second half, that it was a single-digit game. It got down to 9, 8, things like that. You know, it wasn't like it was a game that was like at 35 and we fought back and made it 15, right? It was a game that was around, like I said, at 8, 9 that we just couldn't get over the hump. And credit to Tennessee that every time we got to 8 or 9, they were pushing back up to 12. and that we will fight to get 8 or 9 again. It will push it back up to 12, 13. You know, so later in the game, they did go up like 20 in the game, later in the game, and we fought it back and made it, you know, to 15. But overall, that whole game was like an 8 or 9 point, you know, game. It wasn't like a game. I think that game gave us like a lot of confidence, man. You know, when you're going against the number one team in the country and you're basically neck and neck with them for a long time, long stretches, you know, and it's not to discredit any other mid-major, but no mid-major is like Tennessee. So, you know, it kind of gives you that bravado that you could go in and play against anybody in the country.
Your thoughts on Maryland Eastern Shore having to go on the road to face the Hawks on Saturday?
Anytime you go against Eastern Shore, you know, or any team on the road, it's going to be tough. You know, it's tough to win in somebody else's building. There's a pride factor. You know, there's a familiarity factor. There's a, you know, crowd factor that's usually not favorable to you. That's in somebody else's building. So it's always tough to go and win in somebody else's place. So I know Eastern Shore is dying for their first Division I win. And, you know, we can't let it happen against us, because it would make nothing more for their season for it to happen against us. And, you know, I hope those guys do well. Cleo seems like a pretty nice guy. I already know a lot about him, but he seems like a pretty good dude. And I wish him well. I just don't want him to get, you know, I don't wish him well Saturday. You know, I'll tell you that much, but it's going to be tough. You know, Eastern Shore is tough. It's going to be tough, man. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, no doubt. What are you, you know, does it seem like, I looked up and it's 12 years. Like this is your 12th season. Does it seem like 12 years at Norfolk State? I mean, as the head coach, I know you had some previous years as an assistant there.
No, for the most part, it doesn't feel like 12 years because the landscape has changed over and over, you know, at Norfolk State, you know, we're just college basketball. So it's like, you know, now it's like we're kind of in the JUCO era, you know, so it feels like almost a new job because you're out there and, you know, you got guys for 1, 2 years, maybe 3 years, and they're gone. You know, I think the years of having four-year players are pretty much over. So, like, you now you got to navigate this space. And now, even at Norfolk State, when, you know, we're navigating the NIL space more and things like that, right? So all this is new. So it kind of keeps the job fresh. And of course, just the hunger for more and the quest for everything. Like, you know, there's a lot of good things that I think I've done in my career so far at Norfolk State, but those things are, you know, in the past, you know, whether it's last season or any other season, they're still the past. So you got to keep trying to create new things and create, a different path, a different future, a different present that you can be proud of. So I think that's what I try to do. And I'm trying to create some magic this year. And, you know, we're on the right path right now. We're still a long way to go.
Again, Robert Jones, 12 years in as the head men's basketball coach at Norfolk State. The Spartans are 16-8 and sit atop first place in the MEAC on Saturday on the road at Maryland Eastern Shore. He joins us here on Box to Row. Coach Jones, really appreciate the time. Continued success to you and the Spartans.
Appreciate it for you always having me, man. Appreciate your support. And we're going to try to get another MEAC championship and Box to Row National Championship. We like those awards too. So we're gonna try to keep striving to get those awards. Those awards are just as important as anything else. You know, I tell people all the time, you know, those Box to Row National Coach of the Year. I think I got it. I don't know, once or twice maybe with you. Those are important as well, because it's always good to be recognized by reputable publications. Let's just say that. You know, it's always good to be recognized like that. So we really appreciate, you know, everything you've done.
Appreciate the kind words from Robert Jones, the head men's basketball coach at Norfolk State. Always great to talk with him. So as mentioned, Norfolk State leads the MEAC with a 6-1 record, 6-8 overall, but a 6-1 record. The Spartans' only loss was to Morgan State. Then right there, you've got the two-time defending MEAC tournament champion Howard Bison sitting right there at number two, only one game back. So the Bison only one game back with a 5-2 mark. And, you know, even though you have a limited number, I say a limited number of teams, you have 8 teams. So still, I mean, the MEAC still has the automatic qualifier. I think it would be nice. I heard what Coach Jones said, and it does give you a bit of a reprieve. And I think it's a couple of times that this happens, that you have like these massive 12 days off, especially when you go, you know, the typical schedule Saturday, Sunday, then you go Saturday, Sunday, Saturday. So you have 5 days in between your Monday game to the following Saturday game. But I don't know. I mean, it and I'll ask this same question of Stan Waterman, the head men's basketball coach at Delaware State. He's going to join us in the next segment. But again, still up for grabs. Norfolk State with the lead. Howard right there, 5-2. Delaware State and South Carolina State, along with Morgan State, all 4-3. The aforementioned Stan Waterman, the head men's basketball coach at Delaware State, and he's up next.
The radio program that's talking sports from New York City to Cali and globally on the World Wide Web. From the press box to press row continues after this.
Learn how thousands of smart homeowners are investing about a dollar to avoid expensive home repair bills. John, a former non-customer, said, "My air conditioner broke and I had to spend $1,900 to fix it." Jeff, a customer, wrote, "My air conditioner broke and I got a new one at no out-of-pocket cost." Mary, a former non-customer, wrote, "My heating system stopped running. I had to spend $3,000 to get a new one." Lisa, a customer, wrote, "My heater stopped working. I got it fixed at no out-of-pocket cost." For about $1 a day, you can have all the major appliances and systems in your home guaranteed fixed or replaced. Call now. If the lines are busy, please call back.
Call the Home Warranty Hotline now at 800-824-3853. 800-824-3853. 800-824-3853. That's 800-824-3853.
Doesn't matter what your sport, he talks your language. It's Donald Ware. From the press box to press row, it's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
Let's talk some more hoops here on Box to Row, joined by a gentleman in his fourth season as the head men's basketball coach at Delaware State. The Hornets are playing some really good basketball right now, and as a matter of fact, are going to play on a Saturday also and try to continue their current winning streak. Stan Waterman's the head men's basketball coach at Delaware State. He joins us here on the program. What's going on, Coach Waterman? Appreciate your time.
No problem. I appreciate you having us. Appreciate the interest and the support.
Of course, always very interested in the program. Just your thoughts on the way your team is playing so far?
Well, pretty pleased with the way we're playing right now. Every day we're getting a little bit better. We're becoming more cohesive as a unit. I think our guys are becoming a little bit more comfortable with each other every day, and I think the results are beginning to show.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Just kind of speak, I guess, a little bit to this current winning streak that you're on right now.
Well, we're on a four-game winning streak. We've been able to put together some consecutive games with what we consider really positive and strong performances, particularly on the offensive end of the ball where we've been playing well. But we're getting a little bit better defensively, and I think that's the key to us having any success as we move forward. One of the goals for us is to just improve and get better defensively.
You know, when I look at some of the personnel, you know, Kasim Watson, Robert Smith, Martez Robinson, all playing very well, you know, obviously for you, averaging double digits. Speak to how they've played as a trio.
Well, they've really matured. They've become, as I said, a little bit more comfortable with each other, and they play well off of one another. They complement each other really, really well. You're talking about three of the top 10 scorers in the MEAC, so they certainly know how to score the basketball, but to be able to be unselfish and make the right pass at the right time and to be able to share the ball the way that they have has given us a nice balance and makes us a little bit more difficult to guard.
From a conference perspective, and I asked head coach of Norfolk State, Robert Jones, this, you had at times this season, because of the nature of where the conference is in terms of the number of teams, you're going to have these kind of days off. Do you see that as an advantage?
I think it depends on where you are as a team. Like for us, this last sort of a bye week that we had allowed us some time to get healthy. It came at a nice break academically where the guys, you know, could kind of focus on some schoolwork and make sure that they're really on top of their academics. But I think, and it also allowed for some time to clean up some things before you enter the second go round of the conference, so to speak. So you've seen everybody once, and now you're able to install some new stuff and maybe make some adjustments. So it's been good for us.
What are some of the things you feel like, you know, hey, we, during those times, right, that you've had the times in terms of the bye week, as you said, what are some of the things you've worked on, some of the things you feel like this team has really needed to work on as you try to make that run towards a MEAC tournament championship?
Well, I really think it's about the fundamental and the basic stuff. I mean, of course, every coach in this league does a nice job, and you're going to be able to make adjustments from game to game, but the basics, really the fundamentals of your defensive systems and what you're trying to do offensively, really just to kind of get back to that. And like I said, clean up some things and opportunity to get a lot of shooting, a lot of reps. That's important for these guys as you get through the stretch of the season. Sometimes you lose time for that. You're so busy preparing for your team, but just to be able to get back to the basics.
Stan Waterman, again in his fourth season as the head men's basketball coach at Delaware State, joins us here on Box to Row. How tough early on was it for this team, Coach Waterman? Because, I mean, you had some wins, but you had tough games. Like, you had tough games. You had tough games on the road before you went on that four-game winning streak there. You know, the record was probably not where you wanted it to be. How tough was that?
It was very difficult. I mean, you know, you look ahead at the schedule when the schedule first comes out, and you know that you've got a non-conference slate that's just filled with high major teams, and so you know it's going to be competitive there. And then we open our conference play with the top two teams, or the projected top two teams in the league, with Norfolk and Howard. So you knew that the opener was going to be tough. And so you don't have a whole lot of time to kind of be sparring and feeling things out. You got to come out ready to go. And so we had those two games early, and we lost both those games to Howard and Norfolk, but we were pretty comfortable with the way we played. And then we sort of got things together and, as I said, cleaned up some stuff, and now we feel on a little bit of a roll.
Even though Norfolk State right now is in first place, it's the second, to your point, it's the second half of the season. It's still really anybody's conference, anybody's championship, if you will. So this matchup against Howard, and of course it is at home for you this time. That was you talked about that first game of the season, 100-94, like it was a high-scoring affair. Do you anticipate that this time around?
Well, I certainly hope not, because that giving up 100 points is not indicative of the kind of defensive team we want to be. And I can see that game as if it happened last night on January 4th. I mean, it was the conference opener. You had five of the top 10 scorers in the MEAC playing in that game. So you know a lot of buckets were going to be scored. But I'm hoping that we are playing a little bit better defensively. And if we can have the same kind of output producing 90 points, then we'll be satisfied.
Is it just like that sometime? Like, I looked at the numbers from that game, and I mean, Howard shot like 60% from the field, 50% from three-point range, had a bunch of free throws. Like, is it just like that sometime where you just have to sometimes go toe-to-toe and try to outscore? And I know you don't like to do that, but sometimes it may just be that way, right?
It is, and with some teams, when you face them, you know you got to score. You got to predict and project that there's a certain number of points that if we can make that number, we're going to have a shot to win the game. Howard, that's who they are. They shoot the ball really well. They what I call a system team. They run their stuff. Again, they shoot it well. They share the ball. So they're going to have a high offensive output. And one of the challenges for us is just to be able to slow them down a little bit and hope that we are able to have an output offensively that is close and give us a shot at the end.
So obviously, excuse me, defensively, things have to be different this time around. What else do you feel like has to be different? And again, you're at home this time.
Well, again, we've always talked about making Memorial Hall one of the toughest places to play in our conference. You know, we're selling out games, and our crowd has been supporting us, has gotten behind us, and that's been a big thing for us. So certainly we want to protect the nest, so to speak, when they come here to Dover. But we've got to defend that three-point line. I think one of the other advantages that we've had, one of the things we've done well, is to rebound the basketball and limit shot opportunities and not give teams second shot opportunities, not send them to the free throw line. I think Howard was 29 out of 29 in that first point, in that first game. So that's a lot of points to be given away. And so we can clean up a couple of those things. We feel like we got a better shot.
Stan Waterman, again in his fourth season as the head men's basketball coach at Delaware State, joins us here on the program for you four seasons in? What are some of the expectations? Like you've improved this program from where it was, and I know the aim is to win a tournament, a regular season championship, tournament championship, etc. Where are you in terms of where you felt like you would be four seasons in?
Well, I mean, thank you, first of all, and I feel pretty good about the progress we made. Obviously, we were able to see, talking about that first year coming in and really just trying to change the culture and establish a winning culture. And I felt like we did that in the first year, year and a half. And then we got a little turnover in our personnel, and we became competitive. In year number three, we get to the MEAC championship, and we're just 2.5 minutes away from advancing to the NCAA tournament. This year, year number four, we're hoping that we can take it a step further than the MEAC championship, maybe win that game. And the goal is now to try to get to the NCAA tournament. And I feel like we're on target. We're on target with where I was hoping we would be as a program, but still with a lot of work to be done.
So talk with you last year. You've been in Delaware all of your life. Let me ask, before I even talk about that, are you an Eagles fan?
I am not.
Thank you. Thank you for not being.
So I catch a lot of flack being right here in Philadelphia, right in the backyard, and being a Dallas Cowboy fan. and you know, I must be a true fan if I can claim them this season with the season that they had. So I'm a big time Cowboy fan. So I catch a lot of flack around here about, you know, not rooting for the Eagles.
I'm a Commanders fan, so that may be worse, actually. But I've talked about this for like the last several weeks. The experience that I had in Philly at the Eagles game for the conference championship, one of the worst experiences. So I'm glad you're not an Eagles fan, but that may be worse being a Cowboys fan. but it's all good. You know, maybe y'all will bounce back next year, right? Maybe.
That's the hope. And so I have to explain it. Everybody asks, you're a native Delawarean, born and raised. How do you become a Cowboy fan in Eagle country? I always tell them, when I was growing up, CBS stood for Cowboys Broadcasting System. Those were the only games you saw. And of course, you loved those shiny silver uniforms with the star on the helmet, and it was an easy attraction.
Yeah. Last thought, you've been in Delaware, a player at the University of Delaware, coaching stops, Delaware State, Delaware. I mean, you've been in Delaware high school. What does Delaware, the state of Delaware, mean to you?
It means everything to me. It's home to me. It's what I know. It's where I was born and raised. Again, I played my high school basketball, stayed home, went to the University of Delaware, and represented the state that way. And now to have the opportunity to be here at Delaware State as a head coach. So pretty well known throughout the state and pretty supportive. I get a lot of support from northern Delaware to southern Delaware where we are. And so, again, I think I take a lot of pride in representing the state of Delaware and Delaware State University. So it's really nice to have some familiarity with the community as well as the university and have those people get behind you and support you. So a little something extra to represent in Delaware and Delaware State.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Stan Waterman, fourth season as the head men's basketball coach at Delaware State. He joins us here on Box to Row. The Hornets, again, are going to be at home against Howard on Saturday. And, of course, the Hornets are 12-10 on the season as well. Coach Waterman, we really appreciate the time. Continued success to you and the Hornets.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
We appreciate it, Coach Waterman. So, as I mentioned, I mean, it's still wide open. Second half of the MEAC season. Still a lot of basketball to be played. And, really, it's up for grabs. Like, Norfolk State is playing better than anybody right now, lost to Morgan State, who has three losses, but the Bears have the firepower. Like, it is wide open in the MEAC, and the second half of the MEAC should be exciting. Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to Stan Waterman, head men's basketball coach at Delaware State. Thank you to Robert Jones, head men's basketball coach at Norfolk State, for joining us today here on Box to Row. For more information on the program, visit our website, BoxToRow.com. And always remember to support those that support Yo. Box to Row is produced by DW Communications. When you're